Professor David Yamada, thank you so much for being here. David Yamada is a tenured professor of law and director of the New Workplace Institute at Suffolk University Law School, where he's a globally recognized authority on workplace bullying and psychological abuse. His model legislation, which we will discuss in a bit, the Healthy Workplace Bill, has become the template for anti-bullying laws in the United States. And his Minding the Workplace blog, examining topics such as workplace bullying, dignity at work, and employment law, has garnered millions of page views. And now, for purposes of full disclosure, Professor Yamada was one of the very first people I spoke to when I began my research to understand what I had been through during my career in television production here in New York. So, David, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. David, so much to discuss with you today.
Yes, and Andy, I'm very grateful for this invitation and want to praise you for putting together this summit. It's a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Great. Well, it's great to reconnect. So let's get to it because I've learned so much from talking to you previously, and I want to share your knowledge with as many people as I possibly can. So let's start there. What inspired you to devote your career to, and you've devoted a lot of years to this, to legislation following, or I should say, fighting bullying and psychological harassment in the workplace?
Andy, I started my academic career as an employment and labor law professor. So obviously, as an academic, I was always looking for topics to write about. And I've always had this sort of workers' rights orientation going back to my days in legal practice. But I also saw a kind of behavior that I didn't know what to name. And I saw it in academe, I saw it in the legal profession. And then I stumbled upon this interview with Dr. Gary Namy, whom you've interviewed. He and his wife, Ruth, were putting together this campaign against workplace bullying. And when he started to describe in that interview what bullying was, all of a sudden, it became very crystal clear to me, oh my gosh, this is the kind of behavior I've seen in some minor ways experienced myself. And he was onto something with a label put to this behavior. And that's when I thought, I wonder what the legal protections are for this. And a deep dive into American employment law led me to conclude that the legal protections are few and far between, and that so many instances of workplace bullying fall between our current employment protections. So that was in the late 1990s, going into the turn of the century. And that's what led me down this path to do so much work in this area.
Well, you are the leader in that effort, and what an effort it's been. I also was inspired by Dr. Namy. He was the first person I spoke to. You may have been the second or third. And he inspired me also to get more involved in this work. And it's interesting that you and I are talking today because there was just a New York Times article that found data that suggested that 1 in 4 attorneys feel as though they've been bullied in the workplace, 1 in 4. And I thought in my own experience that, oh, well, I chose television. I pursued a television career as an executive producer, vice president, digital programming type of role. I chose it. I asked for it. It's New York. It's live television. So, of course, it's stressful. And forgive me, and I've said this in a couple other interviews, you know, kind of man up, even though that's gendered, and I apologize for that. But, you know, what's wrong with you? So but I've learned it happens in every sector to every kind of person. Doesn't matter race, creed, color, LGBTQI. It doesn't matter if you're at a high position, if you're an intern, if you're a doctor. So with that in mind, given that I found that it wasn't just me, even though I thought for so many years it was, and I thought it was just television, which of course it's not. How do you differentiate between the types of incivility in the workplace and the types of behaviors that would come under the kind of legislation that you're working on?
Mm-hmm. The Healthy Workplace Bill, this model legislation that I've been proposing for many years and has been considered by various state legislatures, is built around the model of an abusive work environment. It really is somewhat analogous to the way in which the United States Supreme Court has defined a hostile work environment for purposes of sexual harassment. But as you aptly point out, we're looking at these behaviors across the board. It doesn't have to be just because somebody is a member of a certain protected group or a certain demographic status, because as you noted, just about anyone can be a target of workplace bullying. So then I look back at the way in which the NAMIs and many other researchers have looked at workplace bullying and defined it. And we're talking about abusive behaviors, verbal, nonverbal, overt, covert. And when it adds up in a cumulative effect, at some point, it crosses a line and it becomes abusive. It's not incivility. It's not being a bad boss. It is targeting someone, oftentimes with the intentions of driving them out of the workplace. And the worse that behavior becomes, the more troubling it becomes from really a human rights and dignity standpoint. And that's when I decided, well, in view of these legal voids, I should write up something that attempts to draw that legal line. And we use the term abusive work environment because that really captures the heart of what's going on here in terms of the interpersonal mistreatment.
So let's talk about maybe what this is and what it isn't. And I will tell you, and one of the real kind of epiphanies I had, I was a boss since about the time I became an executive producer at 32 of my own television show that I had created. And so I had staffs and I was a boss, call me a leader, not a perfect boss, but it was when I was talking to Dr. Namy, all of a sudden my heart dropped and I thought, maybe I was a bully boss because in times of stress, my fault, I did lose my temper at times. I was short with people. I did interrupt people when they were in the midst of making a point that I disagreed with. And I said to him, I said, you know, I might be guilty of the exact thing that I'm looking into. And he said, well, let me ask you a question. He said, how'd you feel when you went home that night? I felt awful. And how often did this happen? Oh boy, you know, might have happened 4, 5, 6 times a year that I might have acted in this fashion. And he said, what'd you do about it? Well, in most cases, I can't say all, I apologized because it was really more about me and I felt bad about it. I was under extreme duress at that moment or whatever, and I was having a bad day or I had low blood sugar, but those aren't really excuses. And he said, Andy, you're not a bully boss because of the way I felt. And it wasn't how I treated people all the time. In fact, I tried not to treat my staff the way I was treated. So can you go into a little bit more detail about, you know, what does constitute the kinds of things you're going to? Because we do have some laws and they may be effective or not. We could have another discussion about that. But obviously we have civil rights laws that do protect certain classes from this kind of behavior.
Right. Your description of how you acted as a boss raised two of the most important factors in determining when a situation has become bullying. One is the severity of the behavior, and two is the frequency. Yeah, you might have lost your temper a couple of times, but frankly, we're all entitled to a few bad days, right? Mm-hmm. Even as bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it wasn't happening that much. 4, 6, 8 times a year? Gosh, for most of us, that's actually not bad, right? Bullying is a lot worse than that.
Okay.
The behaviors become very targeted, they become frequent, and oftentimes they are part of almost a deliberate campaign, right, of treating someone in a deliberately abusive manner, whether it's the yelling and screaming and verbal abuse, whether it's passive-aggressive behaviors, whether it's engaging in whisper campaigns to undermine their reputation in the workplace and to sabotage their reputation. These are all the kinds of things that come into play. Now, there's another important thing that you mentioned, and I'm going to be guilty of sort of being an amateur psychologist here because I am not clinically trained, but I think it is very relevant.
Yeah.
Is that in my opinion, in looking at who are the so-called bullies, a lot of folks who bully or might engage in what might tick the box as a bullying behavior are exactly what you were suggesting from your own experience. You're getting pressures from other people, right? You're having some stressors. Maybe things at home are difficult, or you just had an argument with a friend or something like that. The everyday kinds of things that can lead us to be on less than our best behavior. However, in contrast, when I've looked at the really, really awful, scary, frightening instances of bullying where it was clear that somebody was in somebody else's sights and they managed to engage in this targeted campaign, oftentimes enlisting others to be part of that campaign. And that's where we get into the sort of the intersection of bullying and mobbing, right? When we see that type of deliberate thing going on, oftentimes that is suggestive of somebody who has one of these personality disorders driving them, right? Severe narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, in other words, what the DSM would call antisocial personality disorder. And when I see somebody who appears to be on the receiving end of behaviors from someone of suggesting of those qualities, to me, that's when it gets to be scary, because that's when you see from the psychological and psychiatric literature that these individuals literally don't have a conscience.
Yeah.
And if they don't like someone, they think of the practical ways in which they can drive them out of their workplace or just make their lives miserable in general. And they go at it. And unlike you, when you went home at the end of the day and you felt, oh my gosh, I feel really crappy for having yelled at that person, they're going home and having a drink and watching a movie or going out to dinner. And it's like, hey, everything's good. There's no conscience to screen their behaviors. And they go right back at it the next day.
Yeah.
Those are the types of cases that have scared the daylights out of me. I think when we talk about where do we draw the line legally, a lot of those types of behaviors and those types of individuals are the combination that inspires me to want to set some minimum legal protections to declare those types of mistreatment an unlawful employment practice, because we have to say, no matter what we can say about the everyday ups and downs of the workplace, that shouldn't be part of someone's work experience. That is morally, ethically wrong. And we have to say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah. And I like this notion of psychological harassment as being against the law, if you will, just like sexual harassment is. I mean, just because you can't see the bruises doesn't mean that your body hasn't been harmed. And so I'm so interested. There's so many things that come to mind for me as you're providing your expertise. One is, you know, as targets or bully victims, it seems that there's such a difference in how people respond. And Dr. Namy taught me that. He said to me when I first met him, he said, you know, are you devoted to your work? Oh, boy, am I ever. Are you hardworking? Yes. First one into the office. You know, are you productive? Yes. I've won awards. I've gotten promoted. All these different things. He goes, yeah. You know, he goes, are you, an empathetic person? Yeah, I'm an empath. Oh, you're the quintessential target, right? You know, and I just remember my first experience. This is not a long story, but I got hazed at a fraternity at the University of Illinois. Now, it was life-threatening, but it was traditional hazing.
Yeah.
But I lived in the house, so it wasn't like I could just leave and say I quit, because it was my freshman year, so I'm scared to death of college. That's where I live. I can't just quit and walk out and try to find housing elsewhere. And the big night of Hell Week, we'll leave it at that. At the end of it, I was so ashamed that I had allowed myself to go through this whole thing. And, you know, then it was over and there was a big celebration. And a lot of my fellow pledges, if you will, David, they thought it was hysterical. They were like, oh, that was great. And they couldn't wait to do it to the guys next year. And I say this, I talk about this in my book that's coming out next year. I never walked through the front door of the fraternity again because I was so ashamed to be a part of a group of young men who would treat each other that way. And even though many of my fellow pledge class members were like, can't wait to do that to next year's guys, I go, if anybody tries to do this next year, I'm going to the university. You know, it was just unbelievable to me. So my question to you is, because some people kind of wash it off, the boss is mean to them and they don't get, and others of us take it so personally, like you said, and then I'll shut up, that you know, the boss just, the bully boss just goes on to the next person to bully or to do whatever they're doing. And I'm sitting there going, what's wrong with me? I'm so hardworking. I'm so productive. Why are they treating me this way? So in terms of the law, how do you deal with those things? Because some people don't mind it that much, it would seem.
Well, that's an interesting question about what kind of proof does someone have to have of harm, right?
Yes. Yes.
And boy, oh boy, you've raised an interesting question, because we all have different things that we might be vulnerable towards, right? In your case, it was that kind of psychological mistreatment of both the bullying at work and also the hazing, the psychological hazing. In my opinion, if you have that combination of targeted behavior and psychological harm, that again is where you have an opening for the law to step in. Now, I guess you could say if somebody is being savagely bullied, but they don't realize it, then technically under the law, they would have no cause of action for damages unless maybe they were fired as sort of the coup de grace of that poor bullying.
Yeah.
But we know from so many examples of team player workers, folks who were just showing up to do their jobs, dedicated to their jobs, not political about how they did their jobs. Yep. Oftentimes, those are the classic bully targets. And the psychological sense of betrayal, of being treated so badly, can be just such a painful thing. And then, as you suggested, some people may experience a sense of shame for, gosh, why did it happen to me? What did I do? All those types of things. When in reality, what happened is some aggressive person saw some vulnerabilities because of your good soul.
Yeah.
And boom, dove in. This is among the reasons why many of us believe that the really severe workplace bullying is more akin to domestic abuse than, say, schoolyard bullying.
Yeah.
Because there's this sort of ugly dance of vulnerability and personal power being put over somebody. And in the workplace, especially in the US, because workplace bullying tends to be more top down,
yeah,
the vulnerability of one's livelihood and their current job security, right? So there's all these questions coming into play. And oftentimes, those people who have not really thought of themselves as being bullied try every which way to get along with their aggressor or their abuser, thinking, gosh, maybe it's just something I'm not doing, that I haven't picked up on that individual's way in which they want to work. There's something I'm doing that's bothering them.
Yep.
And because they want to be these team players, they bend themselves out of shape trying to be that person who can work with that individual, when in reality, there may be nothing they could do. That person is just the way they are. And for whatever reason, they have picked out that person and decided to engage in this targeted campaign of bullying.
Yeah.
And that is one of the, as I said, sort of paradigm cases that we have seen of workplace bullying, are of folks like what you described, the people who are into their jobs, team players, want to contribute, but something ticked off that aggressor that caused them to go after them.
Yeah. I had so many experiences like that in my television career, and I've talked to so many others who had similar experience. So let me kind of flip it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you've made this very clear. I'll make it clear. I always say, nobody threw a stapler at my head where I was gushing blood. I was not sexually harassed. I acknowledge my privilege, but it still happened. And so instead of talking about, and I appreciate how you addressed it, the person who may not feel it as emotionally as others might, but I had, and I know many other targets do, I had digestive problems. I couldn't sleep. I had suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
All of these, I had hypervigilance, you know, where every email from the boss, oh, my heart would drop, or waiting. And for me, I have to acknowledge, there wasn't a lot of yelling and screaming. It was just the mean-spirited nature of the way people were treating me and others. You know, no appreciation, no thank you, just how in that, you know, and, you know, using inappropriate words, you know, swearing in emails or notes or that kind of thing when you're working so hard to make something happen. So my question for you is, would that help my case? If I got, you know, if we're able to get this legislation passed, is that, will that help my case if I have these physical traumas?
Yes, because the legislation, as I've drafted it, does require some showing of physical and or psychological harm. And obviously, that's what you experienced. The more it can be documented, the better. Yeah. In terms of both proving a cause of action, as well as pleading damages for that cause of action, yeah, especially if it's contributing to health symptoms and things like that. So the answer is yes, it would help. The unfortunate thing is that it happened, right? And yeah, that you have to put yourself in there to plead a claim like that. But the bullying, as we've seen it in its most sort of genuine, virulent form, has been the type of thing that on both an emotional and physical level, it really gets to people. And there is no apologizing for the fact that it does get to someone. It just means you're more open to relational mistreatment as an individual. One could actually say if all it does is keep rolling off of someone's back, then maybe there's some a lack of emotional intelligence and an ability to perceive emotions that we would rather people have, right?
Or they
makes
they
it more vulnerable.
Yeah, and they may not care about their job as much as others. And maybe that's a healthy thing. You know, we can have that discussion too. But I loved the work. I loved being in television. I love video production. I loved being in the center of the news and all that kind of thing. And so I didn't want to, and I never did, and I'm still in it, but I didn't want to let the bully win. I didn't, and I had worked so hard to get wherever I was that I felt like I need to stay here. Plus, I needed the paycheck. So with that in mind, too, and by the way, just as an aside, my wife is a pro bono attorney representing domestic violence victims, and she's been really interested in the similarities between these circumstances. Now, of course, she's dealing with women who have been physically abused, and mm-hmm. so it's not the same in that way. But in terms of the boss having power over you, a spouse, a partner having power over you and your well-being, a lot of similarities. Now, let me ask this, because so many of us are cheering you on and cheering this effort on, and I just want to lend my voice to trying to change the workplace and getting laws passed and bylaws passed. But having said that, a lot of people watching and listening to this might be saying, well, who could possibly oppose such legislation? But I know that you're obviously fighting this fight, and there is opposition. Who in the right mind would be opposed to what you're proposing?
So to answer that question, I'm going to go back a number of years when we first started talking about there should be a law that declares targeted workplace bullying an unlawful employment practice, and sort of the early versions of the Healthy Workplace Bill. At first, we weren't really taken seriously. A lot of people thought, well, we've got sexual harassment laws, we've got race discrimination laws, we've got the Americans with Disabilities Act. Look at all the protections we have for people. My legal research and analysis concluded that, unfortunately, despite all of those laws, a lot of folks who've been subjected to sort of generic targeted workplace bullying, they go to talk to an employment lawyer, and that employment lawyer says, sorry, but what you've told me is perfectly legal. Right?
Yes. And
that's what gets us down to saying, okay, let's start putting something out there, a proposal. And that was the Healthy Workplace Bill. Well, at first we weren't taking that seriously. It was kind of seen as almost like a novelty kind of bill to shop around state legislatures. But interestingly, the more seriously we started to be taken by state legislators, the more pushback we started to experience from the corporate and business sector. Couple of objections. One is the claim that bullying is hard to define, and therefore to create liability on the basis of bullying is unfair to employers. I understand that criticism, and it's why I've written the Healthy Workplace Bill in a way that sets a fairly high threshold for recovery, for proving a claim and recovering damages, because you don't want to open the floodgates to claims where people feel like, oh, you know, I felt disrespected, or my boss yelled at me that day, or I didn't like that assignment I was given, things like that. But on the other hand, when you see the mistreatment occurring over and over and over again, well, again, that's where I get back to that point. At some point, it crosses the line into being abusive. Nevertheless, despite my arguments that the recovery threshold is high under this law, employers continue to oppose it. Another thing that they don't like is just the mere fact that somebody can challenge the way in which they're being treated, just, I think, sort of generically. Bullying, we found out, is a very threatening topic to bring up to some employers. Yep. There's something about it that challenges the notion of their power over a particular employee. And I think that's part of the resistance to this, is that if we open that door even a little bit, I've lost part of my power over you. And in my opinion, I can understand that sort of generically, but when I look at the behaviors that I've seen people subjected to, where their livelihoods have been wrecked, where their careers have been wrecked, where their psyches have been wrecked, no, you can't tell me that what happened to those people is okay or acceptable collateral damage for normal management prerogative, because that's not an exercise of normal management prerogative. That's targeted abuse, and that's wrong, and you can't defend it on those grounds.
And even if, in my experience, and I think most people, you said it earlier, it's mostly top down, understanding that there's other forms of bullying as well, but let's just, you know, we know from the data. And we also know from the data that, so even if the bully is a rainmaker,
right?
We know from the overwhelming research, and you know this better than I, the deleterious effect on the entire organization, the entire corporation, of a bully boss and or a toxic work environment. So one would like to think that, yes, they may be losing the possibility of a little bit of control, but they're going to eliminate. And in my world, I worked in communication. Other than the psychological and emotional and physical after effects of bullying, but the real problem was it caused a chilling effect. So nobody would talk to each other. Nobody would collaborate. You were scared to say anything to the CEO because you didn't know he was never going to give you credit and say, hey, great idea, Andy. You were just going to get denigrated. So, you know, and none of it makes sense.
Boom. I was just about to say,
please do.
We know that a lot of these behaviors themselves are not rational.
Yeah.
At least from a standpoint of, do you want to create a psychologically healthy workplace that benefits both the bottom line as well as employees and their morale and productivity?
Yes.
That piece of it is not rational. Defending the bullying is not rational, because what you're doing is defending someone who, as you aptly noted, is destroying morale and productivity in that workplace.
Yeah.
And yet, despite that, the behavior continues to go on, which is one of my reasons why I say we need a law, because guess what? Sometimes you folks say, well, you should let us handle this problem on our own before imposing legal liability. But then I respond, this behavior has been going on for decades and decades and decades, and there's no self-policing. There has been no labeling of this as inappropriate, wrongful behavior that no one should be inflicting on another. So 100% agree. It doesn't make any sense oftentimes. Interpersonal agendas come into play. You've also sometimes got the practice of the kick down, kiss up boss.
Yes.
Whose own supervisors can't believe that they would engage in bullying because they know this person so well. And there's no way they could be doing this kind of behavior. So sometimes there's some disbelief that is enabled oftentimes by a lack of formal or informal 360 feedback right? There's no loop that gets back to top management that tells them you've got a problem here. So it continues to be a very kind of vertical, top-down kind of dynamic.
Yeah. And so if you'll allow me, I want to go off the legal side in just a couple of minutes we have remaining, if that's okay, because I'm remembering our initial conversation. It was so important to me. I called you up to get the legal perspective, but then at some point, either I acknowledged something, but that shame was a big part of my experience. I was ashamed, like in that fraternity circumstance. I was ashamed that I didn't know how to handle the bullies better. I'm not a shy person. For what it's worth, I was an athlete and well-liked in school. Nobody bullied me at school. But in my career, I was full of shame. And the things you had to say about shame as a male, maybe, and women obviously can feel shame about this, but in my case, I can only talk about my shame as a male, as somebody who was treated well in my home life. Can you just go into a little bit of what you've learned about shame, even though it's not particularly a legal perspective? Because I think you have such great insight on it.
You know, I would use two terms, shame and humiliation, right?
Humiliation
that's inflicted, the shame that is experienced. To me, that's one of the most tragic consequences of this type of behavior. And as I said, it often comes or it's experienced by people who, objectively speaking, have no reason to feel that shame. They didn't do anything that earned that kind of mistreatment. And that's what we are learning about interpersonal abuse in general, right? When, again, we open this up to the psychological aspect and post-traumatic stress and all of that, shame can be one of those dynamics. And it is so heartbreaking to me to see that when I just want to sort of jump up on the table and say, no, it's not your fault. You didn't do this. You shouldn't be apologizing. You shouldn't have that sense of putting it on yourself, because that's another piece that we've learned is a symptom of trauma psychology, right? And PTSD sometimes are those senses of blaming oneself for the mistreatment. And so I would say to anyone who has been in this position and has felt that shame is, try to find a way first to be forgiving and understanding of yourself. You don't even have to forgive yourself for anything you did wrong, because you didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But you be kind to yourself and say, you know what? Maybe that shame is something I'm carrying around that I shouldn't have to. And that includes getting some therapeutic help and support from friends and family. But that should not be something that any target of bullying should carry around. You know, I think we can all be more aware of how we treat others, right?
Yes.
And how we react to those situations. With that bromide or that kind of basic principle thrown out, I would still say that in most of these instances, the overwhelming share of instances where people are experiencing shame or feeling shame in connection with workplace bullying, that, oh my gosh, it's just completely unfair in the sense of how the universe works, that they're feeling that. And oftentimes that the aggressors, the bullies, are not feeling any of it, right? Because especially if you are one of those individuals who does have some type of personality disorder whereby you have no conscience, you're not feeling any shame either, right? It's just a blank, maybe even some sick sense of satisfaction over the fact that somebody else you've mistreated is feeling shame. And so I would say, be kind to yourself and remember that shame is not something that anyone should feel because they were mistreated at work by someone else.
Yeah. Well, those important words set me off on my healing process. I'm still healing, but they were meaningful to me then and they're meaningful to me now. And I know thousands of others. So thank you so much for that. Professor Yamada, thank you. This was fascinating, interesting, informative, and so important. And I'm just happy to be able to talk to you because I benefit so much from your words. How can other people best reach out to you to learn more about you and your work and maybe what's going on with the legislative process in their states?
The best place to keep up with stuff I'm doing is the blog you mentioned at the top of our conversation. It's called Minding the Workplace. If you just search those words, it'll come up. And that's where I include updates on what I'm doing. I have a section or a page that contains some advice for those who've experienced bullying. And generally, it's my kind of way to approach the public and to say, here is some stuff that you might find useful. And hopefully they can find some useful information in that. But I also want to say, Andy, in addition to recovering from your own situation and your own experience of bullying, you are helping others to heal by creating this summit, by sharing your own experiences, your own responses, and by making yourself vulnerable in a good way so that others who are going through what you have can suddenly say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm not to blame for this situation. Maybe I shouldn't be feeling this shame. Maybe I've got to look at this a little differently and realize that what happened to me was wrong and that I don't have any apologies to make for the responses I've had to that kind of abuse.
Yeah, and I can only hope that my words in this summit helps those who are in the midst of it or just out of it, and also that maybe our collective voices can help the great work that you've been doing over 20 to 25 years. That would be the greatest thing ever if we could get some legislation in there. So thank you for all that you're doing. Final word from me. We call ourselves bully targets, but now let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thanks for watching.